De un Lucky Palolo,
de un Lucky Palolo, de un Lucky Palolo, de un Lucky Palolo, con Abetu, con na, la huma mele mele,
mamele mele,
oe con na, la huma mele mele,
de un Lucky Palolo,
de un Lucky Palolo, de un Lucky Palolo, de un Lucky Palolo, con na, la huma mele mele,
mamele mele,
oe con na, la huma mele mele,
mamele mele.
Matan y cotela que mate octavo aliki para la puba castillo. Mate la quilua
con ay canamo.
Palo de lo palo,
palili te tala tala. Tu pa mate pa ikea.
Te está un mano que mató lo
te un lu aquí pa lolo
te un lu aquí pa lolo con a ver tu con na la huma mele mele
mamele mele
la huma mele mele
mamele mele ahue te un lu aquí pa lolo
Ότι λέει μα για το πεχέ ο το κοινό ακό μελε μελε άλλο το μάνα είναι ακό που το πεχέ μαλοβάνιο πανία τολόα ότι τε ατούα λάβα τε βικίνα μου άνα χώκα μανουιάνα με τον αλόχο μου χιτά το ούμα λάβα τα ούτο κατάχει ο καχετάει ο καχετάει ο καχετάει εχείου για τε άου te avo ma te hoka aloalo hoka ta aloha atu ai ma te anana hoka mau alalo ki te mamalu o te kau hoka longo longo toke lau ea ma te au ma te atu pahe huika I Aotearoa nei and to all our listeners around the globe tu lou tu koutou mamalu kai a te au te hoka aloalo e toi hoka ta aloha atu ai au Ana ko au kua whilihuilia e tēnei polo kalame mai te tautuanga te mataeke o te olo mā lolo Auckland District Health Board ma te hoka ululunga ki te ahuionga a pulotu Bruce Levy ki hoka leo atua e te polo kalame o tēnei tae au hou olo mā lolo ina Malo pulotu Bruce Levy Hoka whailo aki atu hoki ki te hoka tahi mai o te tātou hiwi hoka pitoa ki te hoale tua ki a Jacinta Whalili Whirau te tātou hiwi hoka pitoa e alai e ala I te polo kalame hoka hewali te ama pahe huika o la mālolo ina I vai aiho takitahi toi hoka tāloha atu ai koko mele mele puka Aloha, taloha ni. First of all, first things first, all praises to our Heavenly Father for giving us the opportunity individually to be the best and do the best we can. Pa more importantly, to serve others. Ko te ala ki te pule ko te tautō. All praises to God. May God continue to guide us. Let's go. Let's go. Okay. My guest today is a dear friend of mine, and she will be sharing with us a lot. There's so much since will be sharing with us, and the less I say, the better. But here's a very brief info on Cinta. As CEO of Moana Research, Cinta leads a group of passionate researchers and clinicians committed to making the early years the best start in life for all children. Jacinta is also studying part-time towards her PhD exploring resiliency. Yes, resiliency among Pacific children. Now, Cinta, in my eyes, epitomizes what the word resilience means. And as she shares with us her journey, you will understand and realize, if you listen, what she's all about. Okay. Mahalo ni Cinta. E amai koe.
We have half time. Yeah, my lord, so if I'm a lung, my mad, but yeah, my madu, oil or lung, my lane, it's I out. Yeah, my molly out of five tight tele, love, I love Susunga Mele Mele, Mole, and I have a noa, or to win a my fatusina, famatalanga, one matto, matanga, wenga leale, le, so if I'm a loloina, pepe, matamaiti, fat before ilato, tinama, tamama, inga toa.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thank you again for inviting me. You know, we love coming on your show, and it's always a privilege each and every time. Although I have to also admit that I've brought a little friend with me.
Yes,
I have brought my 8-month-old, because we were always talking about babies, and this is Jonathan. And Jonathan, as you can see, is at that age where he loves to grab things. Yeah. So he's really taken with your microphone.
Good boy, Jonathan.
Yes.
Grab that mic.
He's really happy to be here today as well.
Thank you, Cinta. You know, it's been a while since I've seen you, and you know, it's like just where we last left off. Always good to see you, my friend. And you know, I last saw you at there was a summit last week, and I was very lucky to make it. I just got in the day before. Cinta, can you just for the sake of our listeners, what was that summit about, Cinta?
Yeah, so the New Dawn Summit was the first of its kind, and it was organised by Pacific Business Trust, and it was a collaboration between PBT and Ministry for Pacific Peoples, with the support of Bright Sunday. And the whole idea was to bring together all our Pacifica organisations and groups who run an enterprise, I guess, with a social purpose. And, you know, we can interpret that in many different ways, but I guess, simply put, it's if you run a business with the idea of helping others in some way, shape or form, then you are a social enterprise. And it was very inspiring, and it was a great opportunity to network with
absolutely
sort of like-minded. I mean, you were there,
that's
you
right.
know, as you saw. It was incredible, kind of the number of us as Pacifica who are doing our best, I guess, to achieve a social purpose, but also with the idea of trying to merge that with business principles. Because I guess, you know, admittedly, as Pacifica peoples, we're a collective people, and, you know, our traditions, our beliefs, our practices are always with the idea of, you know, coming together and supporting each other when we need to. The idea of business sometimes clashes with our Pacifica values, but when you talk about social business or social enterprise, you actually find that resonates much better with us. It resonates very well. And so it's wonderful to be a new company in this time, you know, in this current sort of climate of recognition of this approach to business. So we're really excited to be a part of this, and we're really grateful to Pacific Business Trust and Ministry for Pacific Peoples and Bright Sunday for being involved in that.
That's right, man. What an awesome experience for me personally, Santa. You know, I was blown away. That's all I can say. You know, being in that company of people that were there. But Santa, if we can zone in on your presentation. Thanks. Thank you, Santa.
Yeah, thank you, Mele Mele. I guess, you know, we felt really privileged to share our story at the summit. And as you said, we only had 10 minutes, so, you know, we did our best to try and get some of the key points along. So thank you for inviting us along to share it to our listeners today. So Moana Research were, I guess, a group that came together because we were previously working already, you know, in a service that was all about pregnancy and the first 5 years of life.
Absolutely.
So that was already our passion. We were already working together, but under different ownership. So we were an organization that was based within a mainstream organization. And so for us, you know, we were doing well. We were comfortable. We were secure. We knew that, you know, we were getting paid, you know, to do the work that we do. We were on, sort of like this permanent contract. So, you know, that for us was helped bring us together. But, you know, Moana Research, you know, one of the points I wanted to make is that we are a consultancy group of 6 co-workers who 2 years ago decided to leave all of that behind. So we left a mainstream establishment and went out on our own, and we took a big risk and we set up our own company. So we together signed on the dotted line, and there are 6 of us, so I do want to give mention to them. It's Dr. Tawila Percival, who's a pediatrician at Middlemore Hospital.
Yes.
There's Amio Ikihele, who was on your show recently.
Hi, Amio, if you're listening.
Yes, yes. And then there's Mary Roberts.
Yes.
Again, you know, she's our operations lead. There's Dr. Sini Taufa, and she's our research lead, who recently got married, so we're really excited to attend her wedding.
Congrats.
And then there's Dudley Gentles, and he's our biostatistician, so he has the very important job of taking care of all the numbers and analysis of data. So 6 of us, you know, we our startup story, I guess, is actually one of rebellion. It's, you know, we kind of walked out on our corporate owners, but there was a reason for that. I mean, if we felt that we were being valued and that actually there was a lot of autonomy in our work, we probably would have stayed. But the turning point, I guess, came for us when we realized that a lot of the work that we had developed and poured our hearts and souls into, and some of the work that arose from the partnerships and relationships we had established with our communities, actually now belonged to them. And they decided that they wanted to take ownership of that. And that gave us cause for concern, as you can imagine. So, you know, we were this high-functioning team. You know, we gave voice and resource to the importance of the early years. And we were starting to build a reputation of authentic engagement, of being trusted with the knowledge of our communities and translating that into tangible advice and resources. But then when we felt that our corporate owners was taking control of all this work that actually really belonged to our communities, we really felt powerless over the future of our work. And so, you know, either we stayed and we continued to let our corporate owners sort of take control over us, or, you know, we leave and trust our own truth and just go out and continue to, you know, kind of incorporate our Pacifica values and our Pacifica leadership in the work that we do. And then we decided, actually, if we left the fate of our Pacifica people in the hands of our corporate owners, you know, we'll be doing ourselves and our communities a disservice. So in the end, that just wasn't an option, and we chose to leave. And I guess in a way, making that decision to take control over your own destiny was the turning point for us. And people always ask, what is the turning point? Well, that was it for us. And so, you know, it's funny, like many other great startups, we actually made this life-changing decision at McDonald's Otara. I mean, there we were in the middle of Otara, at McDonald's, and you know, we talked about it. Ummed and ahed over it, and we had already talked about it a few weeks earlier, but we decided right there and then that we were going to do it. And so at that point, you know, we were full of purpose and passion and hope, and you know, we had these great ideas, but we had no money. Which isn't the best way to start, but it's how most companies start. And so you can imagine what our families thought about that. Like, you know, you go home and you go, honey, I'm quitting my job. We're going to set up a company. We got no money, but you trust us, right? Like, you know, we all had to go home and have those sorts of conversations. So thankfully, as word came out, work slowly came our way. And actually, I shouldn't say slowly. It kind of came pretty quickly. And we were immediately in demand, which I guess is reflective of the nature of the work that we do, that it does fill a gap. And that's one of the key things, too. You need to think about, does what you provide, the service you provide, fill a gap, fill a niche? And so, you know, we got work. It wasn't lucrative, but to us it was. You know, to us it was, wow, we've got this, you know, a year's contract. It's going to fund all of us. But the main important thing is that it would keep us all together. And so we were incredibly grateful. And so, you know, I always give a shout out to Rachel Inosa from Alliance Community Initiatives Trust. They're now called the Cause Collective, for kind of trusting us with some of the early years work in that first year, which really allowed us to be established, which really allowed us to rebrand, gave us the space to do a bit more. And, you know, so we're forever grateful for that. I guess the other thing that keeps us going is our faith and belief in God's purpose for us. You know, at the time it was quite difficult because, you know, you kind of pray. You just sort of, yes. The prayers around that time started being really intense.
Right.
And you kind of do the pleading thing, like, God, give us a sign. God, help us. And, you know, but looking back, I always think, gosh, God must have thought, yeah, can you just trust me and get on with it? And so even Jonathan agrees. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it's hard because, you know, God gives you signs, but sometimes you kind of just want to choose the safe route. But, you know, for us, you know, for the religious among us in the group, you know, we needed to learn to trust that. Yeah. You know, at first we couldn't trust it. We just didn't feel that, you know, was it God's purpose for us or not? So luckily we listened. And we decided to go for it. You know, our faith does continue to this day keep us going, and we continue to read the signs, and also we continue to give thanks to Him for giving us this path and for giving us, you know, this purpose, which, you know, it's still challenging, but it's a fun challenge. We embrace it and we love it. And I think that's really important to note, too, that when you are in tune with God's purpose in your life, you know, you do feel that sense of, you know, like strength and resilience to continue on despite the challenges. And, you know, none of us are business specialists. I took School C accounting, but that was about it. I had no confidence in business operations, you know. Like, my pathway was in health. I wanted to serve. I wanted to, you know, kind of work in public health. But I guess, you know, what helped us take a leap of faith was the incredible number of people who encouraged us and who mentored us. I mean, it's just surprising how when you kind of just suddenly drop this, you know, kind of, you just sort of offhandedly mentioned that you're going to set up your own company and you're leaving the university, people were really encouraging. They said, hey, look, you know, here's some tips. Think about this. Think about that. And, you know, it's just advice for free or over coffee. And, you know, I don't want to say for free because we don't want to sound like we're exploiting people. But what I meant was people just offered it. And, you know, we had amazing people like Pat Sneddon, who's currently the chair of ADHB. You know, he's the chair of ADHB. He's the chair of Port. Like, he was on the board of Ports of Auckland. And, you know, he was this incredibly busy man who offered to mentor us, and he ran, you know, he came and he ran a couple of workshops with us, you know, a few workshops. He would still call us up on the, you know, kind of just on the fly, and, you know, you kind of see his call come through and you instantly take it, of course. But, I mean, we are very fortunate to have his support.
Because he believed? He believed in your guys' vision?
Absolutely. He believed in that. He believed in the need for Pasifika leadership and entrepreneurship. He believed in the importance of the early years. And so, you know, again, if it's God's purpose, you know, and if it is what our communities need, then, you know, it will align also with the priorities, with, you know, the current priorities of the day. And so, of course, with us, you know, we've always advocated for the early years, even long before, you know, a focus on child health was even a thing. Like, it, you know, like it was always about diabetes, chronic diseases.
Right.
And
NCDs.
Yeah. So, you know, it's wonderful that over the years there's now been a greater importance placed on the early years and on babies. And that's why I brought him in today. I brought Jonathan in because, you know.
Absolutely. Just walking that talk,
interactions that you have with them is really important. So,
Can I please ask you a quick question? You know, a passion of mine is promoting mental health, you know?
Yes.
And one thing I've learned is we all have different thresholds.
Yes.
In terms of dealing with the pressure, dealing with responsibilities, dealing with stress, dealing with, you know, what have you.
Yes.
And one thing that came to mind for me was, you know, that leap of faith you took, you know, with your old workplace, and you were having those issues there in terms of who owns all that hard work you guys put your hearts and souls into. So you took that leap of faith, not knowing, you know, not having that comfort, that security, you know, the comfort.
That's right.
And at the same time, I mean, around the same time, all that stress of what's the next step, what's your next move, and then baby Jonathan comes along. I mean, what I'm saying is we all have different thresholds.
Yes.
In terms of your thresholds and dealing with the pressure, can you give us some tips for others that...
Yeah.
Like myself will crack. I'm not going to lie.
No. Hey, look, you know, one of the things I shared too at the summit was that, you know, around the time it was all, you know, it was uncertain times for us, and we all felt quite, you know, there was a bit of emotion, you know, we all felt a little bit uncertain. Is this something we should do, we shouldn't do? So, you know, it was quite a challenging time for us because, again, like you said, we were going from security into, like, no money whatsoever, you know. It was so, I guess, you know, and I shared too the fact that, you know, the team looked at me for leadership and said, hey, you know, Cinta, if you resign, you know, and set up a company, we will follow you, we will come. And so, you know, in front of them, I was like, yes, let's do this, you know, we got this, sweet. But then when I went home, you know, I kind of, like, there was a time there where I did have a crisis of confidence. You know, for me it was around knowing, is this the right thing to do? Because, you know, you have the livelihood of your colleagues and their families under your leadership. You know, like, who do you think you are? So you have to give yourself that self-talk around the fact that you are worthy, you can do it. And that's what I did. I basically had to say to myself, you were the hope, you carried the hope of your grandparents, who sent your parents and you to New Zealand for a better life for you and your siblings. You are a role model for your family, your extended family. You were a youth leader. You know, you were able to do all these things, you know, for your church community, for your parish community. And so, you know, you kind of have to tell yourself, you know, like a bit like that Cool Runnings scene where the guy, like, you know, he's looking in the mirror.
My favorite movie.
Exactly,
one of my favorite
right?
movies.
That's the scene we'll never forget. And, you know, you kind of, you know, too low, but, you know, he kind of had to say, you know, you have to be a badass. Like, you have to get up and be a badass. And so, you know, I had to do that talk. Like, you know, you either get up and own it and be a badass boss.
Exactly.
Or just step aside and let someone else do it, you know? And so you have to, and that's what I love about Kendall Collins' talk and what she's doing with young girls at the moment. We need to do it with young boys, but her work with young girls, you can't underestimate the importance of helping our young girls feel empowered to make sure the narratives they hear is that you are bold and you are beautiful and you are smart, and because they're going to have to continue doing that throughout their lives, right up until like in your 40s, I mean 30s, I mean, you know, you know, just to kind of give yourself that sense of, yeah, I can do this, you know, if what makes you think you can't? So, you know, it is, you know, I'm not saying that you just give yourself the self-talk and then it works. What I'm saying is you have to
keep saying
know who you are. You know, you can't underestimate the importance of identity. Knowing who you are and I guess what you can bring, you know, to the table, to the space, you know, that is between you and your communities, between you and your colleagues, you know, what you can contribute. And I think if people really sat down and they had that self-reflection, you know, they'll find too that, wow, yeah, you know, I can do a lot of things. Focus on your strengths. That's probably why my PhD is on resilience, because one of the things that, you know, you find working in health is that you're always, they always, the data and the research that comes out is always focusing on the negative. And so, you know, why not have research that focuses on what our positives are as a Pasifika community? We're doing that a lot better. I think we're doing that a whole lot better. But, you know, and the thing is, once I handed in my resignation letter, it was the best feeling. I felt so liberated and I felt so strong, because in my mind, I knew I'd done the right thing. I just knew it felt right. And so, you know, since then, like, we look back and we go, thank goodness, you know, thank goodness corporate owners did what they did, because we would still be there in our comfort zones. But being pushed out of your comfort zone, sometimes that is meant to be. And I'm not saying that it always has to be adversity, but sometimes we need to think of adversity as opportunity. And if you find the opportunity in adversity, it's amazing how much opens up. And, you know, again, it's different for everybody, but, you know, I guess I'm sharing our vulnerabilities and story of adversity and challenges because hopefully other people who are in, you know, situations where they feel a bit uncertain, there is a bit of a process, but I encourage you to talk to other people, because other people will also identify your strengths. They will reflect back to you things that you haven't thought of. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm doing a lot of talking here. Feel free to interrupt. I mean,
oh, Cinta, yeah. You know, I just recently watched this movie.
Yes.
It's called Chasing Great by one of the greatest All Blacks of all time. You know, it's a story about the way I saw was a story about Richie McCaw's struggles.
Oh, yes.
You know, when he had a lot of time to reflect. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of doubts, you know, really. He really, to me, showed how vulnerable he is, even though he was the man. I mean, you know, he was more influenced than the Prime Minister, in my opinion. And,
yes, that's right.
You know, he had the pressure of the all NZ on his shoulders, and the way he dealt with it, it sounds, it inspired me. Like, Cinta, sorry.
Yes.
Like I said, the less I talk, the better. Cinta, in terms of, is there anything else you would love to share with us? I see you're feeding baby Jonathan there. I don't know how you can multitask. I'll probably just play songs if I brought my baby.
Oh, hey, look, you know, yeah, it's amazing what you can do, like, at the same time.
It's amazing, man. Far out.
Yeah, for our listeners, baby Jonathan's just having his lunch while we're talking. Yeah, look, you know, people who are in those situations, because I guess you do feel a sense of giving back, and you know, I'm not saying that you know, that's going to work every time, because when I was younger, there was a time where I had to go away from it all.
Yes.
You know, this is long before setting up a company. And so I left New Zealand altogether, because sometimes when you have lots of roles and responsibilities, people then define you rather than you defining yourself.
And that's bad.
Yeah. So you feel that you're trying to live up to other people's expectations of you.
You go down.
And then, exactly, because you, if it's in line with what your expectations are of you, that's fantastic. If it's misaligned, and if you feel suddenly that this isn't who I am, and that what people are expecting of you isn't who you are, then you need to step out of that situation, because, you know, people say you need to find yourself, but you can't underestimate the importance of you being clear about who you are and what you want to do in life, because it is a slippery slope, and you do need to be careful that, you know, we all do stuff that we don't want to do.
You'll end up getting sick or being a fake.
Yes. And you also, you don't give it your all, so you're not going to ever produce the best, you know, that you could possibly produce. And, you know, it's so cliche, but you do have to find yourself. You do have to know who you are, and you have to respond to that.
Oh. Absolutely, and how you respond is what counts.
Yes.
Santa, I had a whole heap of questions here, but I'm just in awe of what you've just shared. In terms of Santa, I've got a young family, yes. You know, and as I shared to you briefly before we came on air, you know, I felt quite, to be honest, I felt a bit sad when you said that the most important years for our babies, for our children, is from the age of 0 to 5. Am I right?
Yes, that's right.
And I think for me, and I say for me and others, that's the time when I'm really, like, telling them off.
Yeah, oh, God.
and the way he put it across is that will set the foundation for them, for their lives. Am I correct?
Well, that's right. And, you know, I mean, parenting is not easy. It is absolutely not easy. You know, you have these sort of romantic notions of what parenting is like before you have children. Then you have them, and you think, why has nobody told me about how hard it is? You know, and that's, I think that when we acknowledge that first and foremost, that we do not judge, then I think we'll be able to better support parents. And so one of the things that I thoroughly enjoy, you know, about the work that we do is, you know, you do learn a lot about the science, and when you learn about the science, you realize that, you know, pregnancy in the first few years of life, and, you know, I say this every time, they are absolutely crucial to laying the foundations for how well that child will go on to do in life. That's because people underestimate the rate of brain development in those early years. And so, you know, there's the science around 7 return, which is about trying to understand baby's cues and trying to respond to that. And I'm not saying you have to respond to it 100% of the time. That's impossible. It would drive you nuts as a parent. But sometimes we do have to look out for signs when the baby is trying to communicate with you.
Yes.
And if you respond to that, you are basically laying down, like, the neural synapses. You're building new pathways within the brain. And when you lay that, that stays like that. Like, you know, it's very difficult to undo that. And again, it's really important that we get the science out there, because then the response to that is, oh, yeah, I do that when I do this. Like, you know, my mum-in-law lives with us. And it's wonderful, like, she's, you know, she helps a lot with baby too. So when I hand baby over, she sings to him. And she sings to him in Samoan, and she does the lullabies. And so, you know, that in itself is really helping too, in many ways, set the foundations for what he's going to, you know, be able to process in future. And when you talk to a child, you talk to them, you know, kind of using baby language. And but sometimes, you know, it's okay to just talk to them using words, because the baby then goes, oh, yeah, it's actually quite complex, you know, to, in order to understand the world, it's, you know, you've got to use these, you know, words that I one day will have to learn. And
so you're saying that it's good to talk normally to a baby and say, oh, you're right, my baby.
Yeah, so, we're all guilty of doing the goo goo gaga, baby talk. And I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but what I'm saying is, you know, if a baby's looking at something, say, you know, because Jonathan right now is staring at the window, he's looking, so sometimes you could point to it, like you could point out the window and go, oh, tree.
Absolutely.
Or if he's staring at a car, go past, you go, car.
Yeah.
Car. You know, so these are some of the things that we could be doing to support our children in
development,
to process this complex world that they are going to have to process when they're older.
Absolutely.
And we underestimate just how children are processing that on the daily from when they're born.
Santa, you know, I have to say that, and I have to say this, and I need to be careful because, man, you know what really puts me off is grandparents.
Yeah.
They got 12, 13, 14-year-olds, and they talk like this, baby, do you want to eat? Are you hungry? Are you warm? And then when those kids grow up, they turn on their grand. Like, they're bringing up, they're supporting the kids, and when those kids grow up,
we have to remember that as grandparents, it is their prerogative to spoil.
Even parents,
parents. Yes. As a parent, no. It is not your prerogative to spoil. Leave that to the grandparents. I mean, we love our children, you know, as with all our hearts, but spoiling them is actually not loving them. So I think, you know,
because it will bite them in the back when those kids grow up, you know?
And, you know, we have to let grandparents be grandparents. Sure, if they're caring for your child on the daily and they're giving them McDonald's and maybe fizzy drinks on the daily.
And let them play PlayStation all night.
Oh, yes, So, you know, again, if it's on the extreme end of spoiling, even from the grandparents,
there does
need to be intervention. As parents, yes, we do need to be aware of, you know, kind of the impacts of some of our decisions. Again, number one rule, do not judge. But again, you know, where possible, we need to be supporting our parents and understanding the impacts of too much screen time, for example, and, you know, too much fizzy drinks, or the impact of neglecting them, because it is so easy to leave our children on Fortnite or on the computers, you know, because you're so busy and you just want to get on with stuff. But what we found in the Growing Up in New Zealand study is that it's actually, if you put in limits around your screen time, that, you know, that in itself is also a good thing. So, you know, having no screen time, I guess you're also not really helping your child to be fit for purpose in the future. But giving them some screen time with some limits around that, say weekend only, or, you know, like 1 hour a day at the end of the day, that's totally okay. That's a good thing.
Wow, Santa, we are almost out of time, and it feels like it's only been 5 minutes.
Yes, I think even Jonathan.
too long for baby. Way too long for baby.
Oh, no, he's
been good,
a great time.
Good boy, good boy. Santa, if I can ask you, I just want to put it out there. I don't know if it's the right place, but the Māori surfs, what do you call it?
Oranga Tamariki.
Yes. What, you know, I have no idea or whatever's going on, just see post here and there. But like you said, the science and looking deeper into it. What are your thoughts on that as a researcher, Santa?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, the videos have really elicited an emotional response from our communities, and so, you know, it's such a complex situation to be in. Oranga Tamariki, I guess, you know, as people say, they're damned if you do, damned if you don't. But one thing we do have to acknowledge is that when you know, again, reconciling that response with the science, we are actually also causing trauma. The very thing that they're trying to protect our babies from is also something they're contributing to if you're forcibly removing a child from their mother. Now, we do understand that in some instances it is warranted, it's required. So we welcome this investigation. There's three investigations, one from Oranga Tamariki, one from the Children's Commissioner, so that's Judge Andrew Beecroft, and also one from the Ombudsman, who is an independent auditor, I guess, from the government. That those three investigations will hopefully shed the facts, because at the moment we're just responding to it with emotion.
Absolutely.
And certainly as a mother, as somebody who works in the early years, I too am really upset and I guess disappointed by that blunt response. It's a very blunt response to what is required. But my hope, and as is the hope of many people, is that these investigations will lead to a better response. If the mother is frantically running up and down the ward looking for her baby, then in many instances, that mother should have a chance at being a parent, should have a chance at being with the baby. But instead of uplifting just the baby, how about we put in place measures that protect
the baby and the mother? I think so.
So if we recognize them as a unit,
exactly,
we will probably have a better response to, you know, what judges are identifying as an at-risk home or an at-risk situation.
Holistic approach, eh?
Take them both. And, you know, there are some extreme cases,
yes,
drug-induced mother, methamphetamine.
Right.
Even in some of those situations where it's quite, like, it's early stages, why aren't we putting in place measures to support mums, you know, to help mums come through the addiction,
absolutely,
you know, to come through abstinence with, and also to make sure that if they do go on to have children again, that, you know, they'll be in a position where they can
absolutely
be a good mum. But otherwise, we're just not fixing the problem. We're just ripping the baby away, and then that mum will go on to have another child. And what's also interesting is that a lot of iwi, a lot of whānau are coming forward and say, we want to help, we want to be there, but it's too hard to work with this process that's been put in front of us, too many barriers. We need to remove those barriers. We need to make it easy for our communities to support. And again, if we can keep the mum together with the baby, support both mum and baby with a safe home, a safe environment, you know, then I think, you know,
absolutely,
we do better by our children.
Absolutely. You know, I don't have much of an understanding, but I know a lot of Māori people, you know, some family on that side too, and they're the most loving. They're all about whānau, eh?
Yeah,
you know? So I was a bit shocked, man, you know?
And so, you know, it's easy for a judge to see what's on paper.
Yes, absolutely.
Say, yep, you know, remove this child. Our hope is that, you know, there's a lot more context to what is on paper so that we can, and also that there's a process that isn't so blunt, that doesn't go from 0 to 100.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's where you guys come in between, especially in... Sorry, baby Jonathan. two more minutes. You know, you guys are the link, I guess, in terms of connecting, I suppose.
So one of the things that we have been trying to do with a lot of our work is not just put out research that's data-driven. We put out narratives, we put out stories. So, you know, if you go on our website, you will find reports that actually kind of also have case studies, that have, you know, stories, that have mothers talking about what it really means for them, what this topic really means for them, and not just put out data that has zero context to it.
What is your website?
So it's Moana Research.
Yes.
moanaresearch.co.nz. So it's Moana Research, all one word, .co.nz.
And you guys are pretty, really active on Facebook. I follow you guys.
Thank you.
I love it.
Yes,
so that's another way of understanding what you guys are up to and
thank you. We try. You know, none of us are like social media savvy, but we certainly try.
Humble beginnings. Cinta, we're out of time. we're out of time, man.
Oh, thank you so much, Manny. Really appreciate this opportunity to talk to you and to your listeners too. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope it's been useful. And yes, thank you too from Jonathan.
Thank you, baby Jonathan. Wow, so patient, more patient than me. I really want to thank Santa. Thank you so much. Appreciate your time. I know, I know you, and you're just a beautiful soul from the south side.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. From Mangere, awesome. Yeah. The home of leaders and champions.
That's it. Thank you, Santa. God bless, and thank you to all our listeners, not just in Auckland, nationwide, but also back in the islands. And God bless. Thank you so much, Santa.
Thank you, Mele Mele.
Thank you.
My juice was there on time. You give me them blues.